Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Thursday, April the 1st. USDA releases an interesting set of grain stocks and prospective plantings figures. What will they mean to the marketplace over the long term, if anything? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with meteorologist Josh Darr from Chesapeake Energy. Our panelists in studio today are Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Either way, the numbers settled up in Chicago. These are the weekly Friday to Thursday trade this week on a four-day shortened weekend. May futures in the wheat pit for the high on the week at $4.79 and a quarter from Chicago. A low at $4.49 and a half with a settlement price down 10 cents at $4.54 and three quarters. July, the harvest month at $4.68 and a half a bushel, 9 and a half cents lower. May corn futures $3.60 on the top, the low for the week at $3.43 and a half. Weekly trade 11 and 3 quarters lower Friday to Thursday at 344 and a half, and December corn at 377, down 8 and a half cents. May soybeans on the day, a 977 and a half top, bottom at 930 and a half, settlement price 10 cents lower at $9.42. November at 925 and 3 quarters, up. That's right, up 7 and 3 quarters for the week. April live cattle futures, 96.80 for the high, the low at 94.65. Settlement price there up 262 and a half at $96.65. April feeders at 110.37 and a half, up $3.17 and a half. April lean hogs, 74.30 the high, the low at 71.15. Settlement price at 74.12 and a half, $4.45 higher. You can always hear Commodity Week anytime you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. And while you're there, please do sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. If you don't like it, come back and hit unsubscribe. It's that easy at willag.org. This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Again, our panelists in studio today are Paul Cooley of Adium Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois, Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Pete, let's open with this discussion question. Do you think the U.S. government and farmers by default accurately accounted for acreage shifts in the March 31 report?
I don't think they have, because there's more acres out there that they don't show as being planted. And in the Midwest, all acres will get planted to something.
Bill Gentry?
For the most part, we're going to take them at face value and say they have given the information that they had when they filled out the surveys. But there is going to be probably a drift higher in both corn and bean acres down the road.
And Paul Cooley?
Well, it's going to be a unanimous deal here. I agree with my co-panel. There's about 2 million acres that, plus of CRP acres that they didn't factor in, and 1.4 million acres in eight major crops that they didn't account for. My general impression is that the mixture is probably okay. It probably means more beans on those CRP acres.
And here the way the numbers finished up on the acreage in that report, now corn for the coming year estimated at 88.798 million acres. And the USDA's last report from last year, of course, 84.986. And the average guess for this time around was 89.189. Soybeans at 78.098 acres. million acres, that is, in USDA's prospective plantings report from last year, 76.02. Average trade guess this time around at 78.458 million acres, also released from USDA. On March 31st of this week was the quarterly grain stocks report. It showed a 7.693 billion crop on hand still. That's what's in the bend as of March 1st. 1.27 billion for soybeans and wheat at 1,352. The corn number was within the range, but above the average guess. The soybean number was above the average guess as well. What do you think of those grain stocks report numbers?
Wow, that was the market mover. And, of course, the government probably overthought that cheap prices would encourage demand and feed and also exports. The big factor here, of course, the feed usage, they had it overestimated. It's the first time in over 30 years where I've actually seen the feed usage actually going to be dropped. And the big thing is I never understood why they messed around with the bean stocks the way they did the last time. It probably means our carryover is going to be conservatively instead of 190, 215 at least. And, you know, we're talking about an enormous carryover of probably 1.9 to 1.950 on the old crop corn. These are bin buster numbers.
Everybody else agree with this?
Yeah, and we thought it was very interesting looking at the numbers at straight values. We've got 59% of the crop is still basically stocks in the country. And if you do simple math on that, you know, that's 18% straight line. And if you trim even a couple of percentages off of that, it's still comfortably over 2 billion bushel.
So do you think we're overpriced at this point?
For the time being, a little bit of premium is should be there, but it will probably dissipate once we get a little bit more planting done.
Why is it the soybeans? Do you agree with that? And if so, but why did soybeans end up the week 7 cents higher?
Well, I think we still have South American problems getting beans exported out due to various factors. One, they're too big, any bigger than it ever was, and they got the biggest crop ever. Two, they've been having the strike that supposedly now got over. So companies were still coming here to get beans if they couldn't get them quick enough out of South America. And I think that helped the beans stay up.
I think it's a simple answer. The commodity speculator was in there with both arms grabbing a lot of soybeans. Last week, they basically felt that the government was going to come in with basically an unchanged stocks report. They bought the daylights out of old crop soybeans, sold the new on spreads, and they've just been unwinding those spreads at big time. They put the pedal to the metal and bought it.
You have been bearish since last fall, or at least late last fall. You're going to maintain that right on through how long?
Well, my hunch is we're going to have an early plant, and that's bearish. And one prominent market commentator said there's only one thing that's going to change this thing, and that'll be a drought this summer. So I think we have to be very careful here. I don't see leadership from the administration. I don't see leadership as far as outside markets except crude oil and the stock market.
All right. So let's take it not on the drought side, but let's assume we have a normal growing season. Maybe that we get in on time. We might get in early, might get in late, but let's go with normal at this point. What do you have a producer do with what he's got left in the bin, both old crop and for corn and soybeans, and then new crop as well?
As far as old crop, we're basically pushing it out the door right now, selling small rallies and saying, like, even to the guys this morning, you know, 3 to 5 cents needs to be rewarded. If you can't do it all at once, incrementalize it out and just be a lot more aggressive than you have been. This was a structural shift. New crop, basically the same thing, pushing up to your insurance guarantees. And if you don't want to get that aggressive on the cash side, use an option strategy, selling calls, buying puts, or simply buying puts.
Yeah, pushing the physical out the door, especially an old crop. New crop, hopefully you've got a lot, but if you haven't, you better catch up there on some little bounces and selling out of the money calls a bunch and then buying puts.
I agree with the other panel.
All right, I know that you probably heard it and maybe heard about it after we talked on Wednesday on the closing mark report. Darrell Good was on with us. He thinks that you all missed it, that you all looked at the grain stocks numbers and it's not right that you looked at those quarterly grain stocks numbers and you managed to put those into the end of the year, and that actually he believes they're going to be just about where they are. You can listen to it on the closing mark report from Wednesday of this past week, You can pick that up by signing up in iTunes for the podcast. It will still be there, and you can listen to it. And then you can go back and get from 2 weeks ago on the FarmDoc website the article he penned in Weekly Outlook, and you can read about that. And I'll bet, I'm fairly certain, that you can read it about it again on the Weekly Outlook on Monday of this coming week. So you'll get a chance to see what Daryl has to say. And we'll move on from there. How about that? At that point, I thought we probably should take it up. And I know that Daryl was in studio with me Wednesday morning after the report, and I was on the phone line with Joe Persaki, and we were talking about the report. And he and Joe had a discussion about it. Joe, of course, was neither one way or the other, but Daryl's pretty convinced that the trade has not got this right. So we'll find out whether he's right or wrong and whether he gets a C-minus or an A-plus. And I know what you're betting, so one of the two will happen. Okay, so we're looking at field conditions now. Is there any reason, do you think, that farmers have been worried, but I get the idea at this point that maybe they're feeling a little better about what their field conditions are like, and that they might be able to get in. They might be able to get in and take care of the ruts and flatten things out and get a decent seed bed prepared. Do you think that's going to be possible?
We understand Iowa's going after it pretty hard. I talked to my meteorologist that I have the most confidence in, and he says the warmer temperatures, maybe the next two or three episodes are going to be the half-inch kind. And my hunch is that it looks pretty darn normal to me.
It's only April 1st. We have lots and lots of time. Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done, but farmers are known to be able to get a lot done really quickly. And I'm betting on the farmer to get things done as needed. The only bottleneck I see is applying the ammonia, but we'll get that on if we have to side dress.
And one of the things we've been talking about is, you know, as far as planting time, it doesn't have the same restrictions as far as harvest. Harvest is constricted by pace. But in the spring, with the planters and the equipment that we've got today, you can cover a lot of ground in a hurry.
All right. So the other thing I suppose to think about in that is that we know you can plant corn awfully late anymore. Actually, you can plant it into its normal time.
And you can plant a bunch in one day. I mean, I had several customers last year planted 40% of their crop in one day.
The feedback I get is that there is some shorter season corn. The boys bought a little shorter season corn. They're going after the triple stacks, and there's some, I think five stacks now with some companies. And the other thing is that, yes, there'll be a little quicker switch this year than there was last year. That's the surveys I get.
When you say the boys, are you talking about the boys in Iowa went back to shorter season corn?
I think right in our own backyard. Season corn is a big time. And I think that the one thing, the other factor is that I think the triple stack corn and the route that way is keeps the weather variability at downplays that, and I know that was a study that some of your coworkers worked on this last time, that we've had high yields based on good weather.
Have you been watching the price of crude oil, and what do you think of that? It's managed to come
roaring
back.
Yeah, we went almost took out the high from September of 08 or something this week, and the U.S. has plenty of crude oil. It's got plenty of fuel. I think it's, again, people with the big money in there pushing it around. I don't see the need for it to be this high.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting thought. So you don't think it's particularly economically driven or demand driven completely, but a little vapor in the background.
Yep.
And the one thing that we noticed is that if you had this crude market rally to this level, 45 days ago, your commodities would have responded a lot more aggressively. Now that we've got the season semi-started, and like you say, the producers are feeling a little bit more comfortable about making some progress, the commodity markets, are, especially the grains, are not as closely linked to it, and it's not influencing them quite like they do.
I am nervous about the market, and if I was the administration, I'd be extremely nervous because high unemployment, high gasoline prices, that hurts the economy. It's a big slowdown in the economy, and I'm afraid that crude oil is for real at these higher levels. And that's one reason I think that at some point in time, the administration has to push a little more ethanol into the mix to keep prices from exploding.
Well, that was my next question. What do you do about that, and how do you work that into the ethanol side? So maybe you've got an idea there?
Well, we hope so. And the administration has to put people to work, and there's a lot of people that get put to work with ethanol.
This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists in studio are Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. When we return, we'll talk with Josh Starr. He's Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, and serves as a meteorologist there.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. It was a delightful week across Illinois and Indiana in the wake of last weekend's rain. High pressure built in quickly behind the storm late last Sunday, and by Tuesday, it was already along the Appalachians. That allowed southerly winds to develop across the Midwest. A warming trend began that peaked on Thursday with high temperatures reaching close to daily records in some locations. Afternoon temperatures were into the 80s across the entire state of Illinois. Only a high level of thin clouds kept temperatures from going higher. Precipitation was non-existent after Sunday in Illinois. The dry weather, along with warming temperatures, low dew points, and brisk southerly winds, made for some healthy evaporation rates to help dry out fields, which have been saturated in parts of Illinois. A cold front will sweep through Illinois this weekend, accompanied by some showers and thunderstorms, but should be east of here by Easter Sunday. Another cold front trailing from a strong low will likely move through here late Tuesday into Wednesday, also accompanied by showers and thunderstorms. Following that, we should see a string of several days of dry weather through next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This program is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our panelists in studio are Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. On the phone line today as our guest is Josh Darr. He's with Chesapeake Energy and serves as a primary meteorologist for them. Good afternoon to you, Josh, and thank you for being with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
We are doing very well. It is a magnificent day on the day we recorded this here in central Illinois, topping out at about 80 degrees, and we suspect it will be that way for a couple of days. The winds are expected, I suppose, to pick up, although they're fairly light at this point. Do you think producers will be able to, well, actually, I'm looking out and it's 35. the wind picked up already. It was four earlier this afternoon, and now at this time it's 35. So those winds are there. Will we continue to see this kind of weather that dries soil conditions out very, very quickly?
That's a great question. And as we think further into the month of April here, at least for the next couple weeks, it looks like as storm systems eject out of the Rockies and cross the plains in the Midwest, that you produce more precipitation across the central and southern plains, and then the northern plains in the northern Midwest, and then the heart of the Midwest from south central Iowa across through Ohio is kind of the drier region in each storm system that crosses. And not only is it that region, north has more precip, south has more precip, but as you move from Iowa towards Ohio, you also go lower precip totals for the next several weeks. So eastern belt, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, this drier and warmer than normal regime looks to stay with us through the least, certainly the first third of April and potentially the first half. The further west and the further north you go across the Midwest is where you're going to see the trend towards cooler temperatures starting next week and also more active precipitation.
Josh,
so here, yes, oh, go right ahead.
Yeah, Josh, we understand, and I see this written in some of the meteorologists that we look at, they tell us that Canada has been above normal as far as temperatures are concerned. And do you feel that the Canadian temperatures will moderate and become more seasonable in time, or do you think this is going to be kind of a something we're going to be watch on into the early summer?
That's a great question. Actually, Canada recorded their record warmest winter since they've kept records back to the late 1940s, and a lot of factors came together to give them their record warmest winter. As we move through here, the springtime at least, it looks like you do keep temperatures above normal in the bulk of Canada, the prairies through the Hudson Bay region and east, and a lot of that has to do with what's going on in the equatorial Pacific regions with the current El Nino event. Warmer waters in the central and eastern Pacific translate, and there's a very high correlation to those warmer waters and then warmer conditions across Canada. And so one of the key variables, not here for the next couple weeks, although as we get into May and beyond, is what happens to this El Nino event. If we start to lose the El Nino event and you go towards neutral status or the opposite of El Nino, which is La Nina, then we have the potential to lose the anomalous warmth in Canada and potentially build some of that warmth more into the central U.S. as we move through the summer. So what happens to El Nino the next month, the next 3 months, will be a huge dictator from a weather standpoint of what eventually could be the ramifications here in the Midwest.
Kind of springboarding off that question, what we've seen is a pattern of extremes basically for the last year almost. Do you see any flattening out of that pattern, or is it going to persist for a while longer?
That's a great question. It's actually very remarkable the level of extremes we've had, and there's really no indications to say that that completely goes away. Now, the level of extremes, we've had extremes, if you will. We've gone, just the needle's been going back and forth from the extreme side of warmth to cold. That probably dampens out a little bit as we move through later in the spring and the summer, but when you get cold, you're likely going to be well below normal temperatures. But when you get warm, and particularly if we lose the El Nino event, we go to neutral status or we head towards a La Nina as the summer moves on, then you start building the potential for heat in the plains and in the Midwest. And certainly from an agriculture standpoint, the heat in the middle of the summer is the biggest concern. And what we need to see, if that's more likely a scenario to occur, is that we lose the El Nino event and we go towards La Nina.
Your general ideas of things, what kind of a spring are you predicting? What kind of a summer, or do you have anything such as that in there?
Good question. Our spring looks to be here for the next couple weeks, the bias of precips out west. As we move later in the April, looks like that bias of wetter conditions shifts into the northern delta in the southeastern Midwest, so Ohio River Valley, southern Illinois, Indiana, Ohio. So you almost have, in our opinion, maybe a reversal of where the wet anomalies could be out west in the first half of April, in the east in the second half of April. And then beyond that, May actually, some of the preliminary indications look like May won't be all that bad. There's no real distinct wet anomalies across the heart of the Midwest. It's actually more up in the northern plains. So from a planting standpoint, you were saying in the prior segment, you only need a couple days to get the crop planted and established, and the risk of repeating what we've seen the past 2 years with excessive wetness and cooler conditions across a substantial portion of the Midwest, that looks much less likely here this spring than it has the past couple.
Can you turn your attention to some other parts of the world? I'm thinking of China in particular. Their growing season is roughly the same as ours. And they grow the second largest corn crop on the planet, though it's about half the size of ours. What did their winter look like? What kinds of subsoil conditions do they have? And how have they set up for the spring planting season?
Great question, Todd. China, in the heart of the Corn Belt, looks just fine. They had an active precipitation regime this winter. They, along with most of the rest of the Northern Hemisphere, had anomalously high snow cover that is now melted. And the active precipitation zone, at least so far this spring, has been basically along the Corn Belt region. So their soil moisture profiles, their irrigation levels, a lot of the China crop does afford irrigation. Things look good there. Now, having noted that in the southwestern part of China, there's a severe drought underway, and that certainly is making news headlines recently. That is out of the Corn Belt. It's out of the summer crop belt. It's more southwestern China, and the conditions there in the drought do show some signs of getting a little better here in the next several weeks as an active rainfall regime follows into southwestern China.
Josh, on a weather trading deal, what market jumps out to you as far as the most correlation to weather and trading at this time? In other words, pick a market and say, hey, this one is we're watching because of weather.
Certainly in the agriculture space, I would say right now, world wheat supplies, we're looking for the signs of something to go wrong from a weather standpoint. The only thing you can point to right now is that Australia has been very dry. But globally, winter wheat belts, as we're sitting here in the spring, look very favorable, much more favorable than we've seen the past couple springs. And so from that standpoint, the ideal conditions nearly globally for the wheat belt is something that we haven't seen, at least in the past couple years. You've always had at least a couple minor producing areas have some regional issues, and right now we just don't see that. So I guess that's kind of the opposite of what you're saying. There's a lack of weather issues, at least here currently in the winter wheat markets.
Now, can you talk about one extra place? And I know that they're probably closer to the harvest season for their wheat than other, but Delhi, in the last couple of weeks, has been extraordinarily warm.
Yes.
Hot would be a much better word, I think.
Downright, yeah. Hot's probably not even covering it, Todd. They've had record-setting heat across India with temperatures for several weeks on end here above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. They went through the heading stage without that from a winter crop and the winter wheat crop itself, a lack of damaging heat. But certainly, if you have that excessive heat for that long of a time, it is going to take a little bit off from the quality standpoint. Certainly the dry conditions are affording very good harvesting conditions, but that level of heat is unprecedented. It's more like the heat you see in late May and early June before the onset of the monsoon. It's been quite remarkable.
Josh, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, guys.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. You can hear somebody from his office each and every Monday afternoon on our air right here on the Closing Market Report, if you'd like. That's our daily program. Now a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
As you gear up and get out there and doing things, be careful. Take your time. Don't cause an accident to yourself, and watch for bounces to unload some more of your old and new crop.
Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Certainly, we need to make sure that we do reward those bounces even when we're busy. Keep those cell phones close.
And Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services.
Have a nice Easter weekend.
And our thanks again to our panelists in studio. They were Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Norman, Illinois. Our guest was Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. You can always hear it again online if you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.